But yet, the full understanding of the implications of the Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, we haven't assimilated either. So we're sort of in between, in the worst possible place. We have neither a Mesira nor a Shulchan Aruch. When in reality, we ought to have both, we have pretty close to neither. And you'll find, and sometimes we're better off, and I think probably those people, in some regard, the least learned, are probably the best off. Because the least learned just follow forward what their was before them, the previous generations in their family did. So they don't have to have any big cheshbonos. So the things that they do very right. I mean, the problem is that the things that we learn from experience, when we did not observe certain phenomena take place, or we misapprehended them, then we wind up in the wrong place. When I was in yeshiva, turn the clock back 40 years ago, among my chaverim, they were talking with fellows who came from good, upstanding Shomer Shabbos families. You know, their fathers were good, solid young Israel members across the board. Good, firm, you know, firmly from, you know, Balavata. I was one of the only ones, in fact, who was at home, the Kalim, were tabled. Most of my chaverim, their parents never heard of Tfilas Kalim. Just never heard of it. I'll explain to you why in a moment. And consequently, they would have, their parents would go away for the weekend, whatever, go to Eretz Yisrael. They'd come with a van, a seisha wagon, take all the Kalim, bring them to the mikveh, and you know, they couldn't even explain to their parents. They think that they came from Mars. That there's such a thing as Tfilas Kalim. Why? Very simple. Because in the poverty that existed two generations back, with the generation that came from Europe, they didn't buy Kalim every day. They bought Kalim, and that's what they stayed with. It was rare that they bought new ones. And if they did buy a new one once in a while, so your father went to the mikveh and he took care of it and he brought it home. You never knew about it. It's happened so infrequently. I, in my youth, remember a couple of times, once or twice, going with my father to be Tovel Kalim. It wasn't a very common thing. I remember once we went to the, I think it was in the bay, in Jamaica Bay or whatever it was, you know, went to be Tovel Kalim there where we lived, you know, it was closer than going to the local mikveh. So we went. So I remember I had actually went to be Tovel Kalim with my father. So it's a halacha. It just disappeared. People didn't see it. It wasn't part of their experience. And they were not learned in the sense of learning the Shulchan Aruch. So it just didn't exist. But their children went to yeshiva and discovered that there was such a din. This was like an uproar. So, despite the limitations of learning by experience, but it's a major way that we learn. And people started to become more learned, and the rudimentary aspects of Yerideya became more well known. So if people that have some association with learning, they may learn a number of quite a bit of their life full time, but they know the rudimentaries of Yerideya. So what's the problem? Why do I need a power of an iPhone? You know, if it's cold, so what's going to happen? You know, everyone knows that the most basic halacha is that if you take a milicha knife and you cut a cold piece of meat, and the milicha knife is clean, nothing happens. So that's all. So whatever, I'll take a milicha knife, a flesher knife, I'll cut whatever I want. It's cold, nothing's going to happen. And this is one of the fierce ways to make your house chafe. Why? We have a category of things in the halacha which is called dovah harif, things which are sharp, very sharp. Included in this category are garlics, onions, scallions, leeks, lemons, limes, pickles, horseradish, just a few common examples. If I take a fleischige knife and I cut up an onion, even if the knife is immaculately clean, and even if it hasn't been used for weeks, the onion is fleischig. So if I take that onion now and I put it into a milchige pot, I put it into a parva pot, whatever it may be, or it's a leftover onion from yesterday, and I hate hair for milchigs, and I want to use hair for fleischigs. It's a serious problem. So the onion itself is now, if I cut up whatever knife, I cut it with a fleischig knife, the onion is fleischig. If I put it into a soup, that's milchig in a milchig pot, so I just trafed up the milchig pot. It's a shayla, but it's the rice or the rabbanon. There are those that say, in fact, that it's possible b'chol of the raisa, not even b'chol b'chol of the rabbonah, it's b'chol b'chol of the raisa. Such a case. If you cut up an onion with a fleischige knife and you fried it in butter, it's b'chol b'chol of the raisa. The Rashba, the Chassam Sofer talk about it. It's not. So this is one of the halachas which became forgotten along the way, the idea of Dovah Harif. Now Dovah Harif is a particularly grave halacha in your day. Why? Because it breaks all the rules. In your day, there are two basic rules of your day, and that's usually you stay out of trouble if you luck out with one of those two rules. If things are cold, nothing happens. And if things haven't been used in the last 24 hours, nothing happens. So if you take a milchige pot, which hasn't been used for more than 24 hours, it's clean, and you cook a roast beef in it by mistake, the roast beef is kosher. The pot has to be kosher, that's something else, but the roast beef is kosher. So, because it wasn't used in the last 24 hours. If you take a piece of meat and you put it down in a milchige plate and it's cold, so the milchige plate just has to be rinsed off well and without hot water, and it's kosher still. So nothing happened to the meat either. Other than the fact that maybe you have to wash it off under certain circumstances, but that's it. So those are our two escape hatches in Yoredeya, which solve 99% of the problems. Either that the utensils involved were not used in the last 24 hours, either they were not used in the last 24 hours, or they were cold. Those are our two escape hatches. When it comes to a Dovah Harif, something that's sharp, neither of those two work. The halacha is if I take a knife and I cut through an onion, let the knife be immaculately clean. Let it be that the knife wasn't used for weeks already, let alone 24 hours. And I cut through the onion is fleischig. And certainly if I chopped up the onion, the whole onion is fleischig. If I just sliced it with edge, so there the Ramah says, k'dei netila, maybe a finger's worth, is fleischig, b'di'evet, l'chatchila, the whole onion, and b'di'evet, you only have to count like one finger's worth to be fleischig. But if you actually chop the onion up with the knife, the whole onion is fleischig. Without any. So this is halacha number one that we have to be careful about. This is one of the halachas which we went backwards in. The Masorah is stronger than what people realize today. Now, how far this goes, this is a good way you could really make your house treif with this. Why? What happens if I now I sliced up an onion, and now I put it into the food processor to chop it up all the way? What happens to the blade of the food processor? So now the onion is fleischig. Does the blade become fleischig or not? Because it's chopping up an onion, fleischig onion. The Mogen Avraham, it's cited in the Mishnah Berurah and Siman Tov Nun Aleph, the Mogen Avraham says that the blade of the food processor becomes fleischig. Okay. Now if that happens, tomorrow it's a powerful food processor. I chop up an onion to put in the milchige dish. And that onion, it's a fleischige knife now. So that's now a fleischige onion. So now I put that onion into a Milach HaGadish, so I have Basel B'Cholov. Now I took that Basel B'Cholov hot and I put it into a Milach HaGadishes. It starts to snowball. There is a view of the Chavas Das, that the Chavas Das says that the food can become fleishig, for example, from the blade, but it cannot make the blade fleishig. So the Chavas Das is a safety mechanism that I use if the shayla gets too out of hand. You know, so we could short circuit it at that point. That b'di yishas adchak, I'm samech on the Chavas Das, that the blade didn't become fleishig. So the onion that you cut tomorrow, presuming that you clean the blade, remains parv. So now when you put it into the milchika pot, it didn't treif it. So if it starts to really get out of hand, so then I rolled out the Chavas Das. So this is just some indication of how far this problem could go. So this is an area that needs a great deal of care.
That's when the power of a knife comes in handy.
Yes, that's why if you have a power of a knife and you cut onions or the likes, you cut them with a power of a knife and also cut them on power of a cutting boards. Because if you cut them on a flashing cutting board, what happens? I'm choshesh l'chumra. There is discussion in the Darkei Tshuva about it. What happens? So make sure the cutting board is power of, the knife is power of. And I'll tell you one yisayid that I have. It's a good yisayid for your health. I insist upon it, and when mashgichim ask me for commercial uses, what they should do, I'm absolutely insistent upon it. But in your house, it's a pretty good idea too. And that is, if you ever cut a knife with a fleishig knife or a milchig knife, and you don't use the whole thing up, do yourself a big favor, throw it in the garbage can. The amount of loss you'll have from that is a lot less than the loss you're likely to have if you now take that one that you cut with a milchig knife and make a roast beef with it. So, a word to the wise. Just these things that in commercial kashrus, when I'm asked, I tell the mashgichim, do not let it around. It's half an onion, right in the garbage can. You know, who could take responsibility for what's going to happen next with it? Now, there's another thing which we don't do well. And that is, again, because we're a little too sophisticated. And as the world has an expression, perhaps too clever by half. And that is, you'll go to a meat takeout place or a dairy takeout place, and you'll ask the proprietor. So the proprietor tells you, listen, in my place everything is milchik, everything is fleishig in my place, you know, it's just meal mart, we have chicken, we have meat, we have fats all over the place, you know. You can't, you know, take responsibility that anything, everything here is fleishig. You go to the pizza place, he tells you everything is milchik. But we're sophisticated people, so we say, listen, you know, he has fleishig kalim there, he has meat kalim, he has dairy kalim, but, you know, but this thing is parv, so therefore, for example, if I go to the pizza place and I buy the garlic nuts, so I can eat them after, they're just made in fleishig kalim. What's made in milchig kalim, you can eat it a fleishig meal, if it's not simultaneously, and if there was 24 hours in between, it hadn't been used for 24 hours, so you can eat it bizarre chazar, you can eat it at a fleishig meal, just not together with the meat. So in other words, the dairy pot wasn't used for 24 hours, now I cook something in it, so I can eat it at a fleishig meal, just not with the fleishigs. So the cheshbon is a very sophisticated cheshbon, we're all sophisticates. But we're not sophisticated. Why? Because we don't realize how a commercial kitchen works. And let me explain to you how a commercial works. I think this happened last year, but just we'll give you a little insight into the dynamics. In the dynamics of a commercial kitchen. So anything that's fried goes into a deep fat fryer. The deep fat fryer is not like a frying pan. You don't just put a little bit of oil into it. I think the cheshbon was that I went through last year, I think it had about 30 quarts of oil in it, if I recall correctly. A huge amount of oil, if I recall. I think it was 30 quarts. The amount was huge. I mean, because what happened was a guy came, a repairman came, and the thing wasn't heating properly. So they called the repair service to come. And all of a sudden the cook sees that the guy put the thing up, he warmed it up, and he wanted to see how hot it is. He takes out a food thermometer and he sticks it in. But this guy does trade for places too. Or every place he goes until he sticks in the food thermometer. Now, to empty this thing out, to clean it out, and kosher it, is a huge headache. A deep fat fryer. Very, very hard. It's kosherable, but with a tremendous amount of difficulty. So he came and brought me out to the kitchen. We did the math. We looked at the size of the thermometer, decided there's no shayla, that there was shisha, and it's kosher. Now, because of this, they do not empty the oil out of fryers too readily. And there's a ton of oil in there, number one. Secondly, they use very expensive oil because they don't want the oil to get smoky and burn, like the oil that we use on our stoves at home. So there's special commercial oil which is made to withstand the high heat and not break down and not to burn that they use. So they buy a much more expensive oil, but it's much longer lasting, and ultimately it's worth their while. But if you're going to go emptying, as they're staying out too often, it's not going to be worth your while at all. So let's go back to a pizza place. What else did they make with the garlic nuts? So there they made cheese thing. I don't know what they're called even. But they have the fried cheese that they put inside and sell in the pizza places. So it's that same oil that they're making the garlic nuts in. So it's not that they used it in a place that had milach kalim. Maybe it was yesterday's. It's actually being made in oil, which has the taste of cheese in it. So it's actual milachiks. Now, what's the implication of that? The implication is very simple. If I ate fleishiks, I may not eat those garlic nuts for 6 hours afterwards, because they are actually milachik. They're not something that had been made in milachik kalim that some had to know. They're actual milachiks. But this is totally blown away by people's semi-sophistication. You know, they're sophisticated enough to understand the difference between milachik kalim and actual milachiks, but they're not sophisticated enough to understand the workings of a commercial kitchen and the type of equipment and ingredients you use in a commercial kitchen, what its implications are. So that oil, I don't know when they changed the oil. I have no idea. But it's few and far between that it ever gets changed. I can't tell you. I have no idea when but it's very, very infrequently changed. The oil's kept in there. So this is now, let's deal with a little bit. There is an aspect, there's a twist to this, which is also confusing, which is on the heter side. And that is, if you went to a fleishiger restaurant and you bought the French fries there, those French fries are fleishiks. Why? Because they're made in the same deep fat fryer that they fried chicken in. And it's in the same oil, so they're fleishiks. Now, so that has two sets of implications. One is, if you ate what's truly hot cheese, and this is halacha, we're going to have to relearn, Rabbi Yisai. Right now, the only one that comes to mind immediately that we have in our market is the Parmesan cheese, which is aged more than 6 months. Somewhere, I would predict in another 2-3 years, something like that, we're going to have real aged cheeses, ones aged for a year and more, that are going to appear on our kosher market. They're already starting to penetrate the kosher market. In other words, all these sophisticated non-Jewish cheeses, but they're not yet at the point that the major national hashgachas are giving hashgacha to them. But it can't be too far away anymore. It's an item which is starting to appear. And many of the smaller hashgachas are giving hashgacha to them. And consequently, it is only a matter of time until the major national hashgachas are going to start to give hashgacha to it. So we're going to have to relearn the whole halacha of hard sheets, because we're going to have real hard sheets, which is aged more than 6 months. So after that hard cheese, you can't eat fleishiks. So these French fries are fleishiks. You wouldn't be able to eat them. On the other hand, there's a very interesting shach. Let's say I ate these French fries. That's all I ate. What about a portion of French fries? I ate French fries. Do I have to wait 6 hours afterwards? Now, certainly for the Ashkenazim, we have the din. I'm not sure what the Sfardim and Noyag here, but at least for the Ashkenazim, we have the din of tapshul shel bosor, a cooked item which contains fleishigu ingredients, so you have to wait 6 hours after you eat it. That's the way we're knowing, not only an actual meat, but if it has fleishigu ingredients in it too. So now, what happens if I eat these French fries? Do I have to wait 6 hours? So there is a shach, and I will tell you the way I understand the shach. Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal also understood the shach this way. The chassidim don't want to hear from the shach. They'll want to turn him anyway inside out, other than to be saying what the poshut pshat in the shach is. They're not happy with this shach. But Rav Moshe learned the shach straightforwardly. That's what I believe personally. I've always thought the pshat in the shach was. The shach says the following: let's say you have a fleishig pot, and it wasn't 100% clean, and you cooked some pasta in it, and you ate the pasta. Now we're in a situation where you didn't have shishim. In other words, the pasta was not 60 times the amount of the little pieces of meat that were left in the pot. It wasn't 60 times, let's say it was 30 times, so the pasta is actually fleishig. But the shach says, nevertheless, you don't have to wait 6 hours after you eat this pasta. That's a shach. So what's the reason for it? So the reason for it seems to be that, according to the shach, that a tavshul shel bosor means something that I intend to flavor with a fleishig ingredient. I take some beef fat and I put it in to give it flavor. That's what I put it there for. That's what we're machmer with tavshul shel bosor. If I just happen to wind up with a fleishig ingredient that it was not my intention necessarily to use to flavor this particular item, it just happens to avoid to be there. So even though the marriage fleishigs, because he didn't have 60 times as much pasta as meat, but nevertheless, there's no minute to wait 6 hours afterwards. Here they didn't insist on the 6 hour dip. Now I came when Chaim Eli was married, so he was married in California. So I come to the chasen in Los Angeles, and I have a cousin. He's my first cousin's husband. He's one of the rabbeim in the Valley Torah Center, the Chofetz Chaim in the San Fernando Valley. He's a Lakewood Talmud. I met him first yet in Chaim Berlin. We were both in Chaim Berlin back in the mid-60s. And he's a very, very choshev Talmud Chacham. Really choshev Talmud Chacham. So he comes over to me at the wedding, and he asks me, this din, what happens? Do you have to wait 6 hours, like after this type of French fries? So I told him, no, you don't. So he asked me, so why is it different than tavshul shel bosor? So I told him the reason that I told you. Here's, I intended to use it as a flavor. Here, I didn't intend to use it as a flavor. So he was happy. So he says that what happened was this very choshev Talmud Chacham in Los Angeles is extremely respected in the world of kashrus, of Eidelitz is his name. And this is what the Eidelitz told him, that you don't have to wait 6 hours. So they were hacking him, and he defended his position exactly this way. So when I came, my cousin came to ask me without telling me that this, and they just had this discussion with the idolist, and he wanted to know if I agreed or not. And he didn't tell me exactly that way, but he heard exactly, I told him exactly the same Torah, the same pshat in the shach, with the same hesber, the same shach. So he was happy. So it will come out the following. The French fries are actually fleishig, so you couldn't eat them if you ate real hot cheese. But if you ate them, you wouldn't have to wait 6 hours either afterwards. Just one of the anomalies of the halacha.
If they're fleishig enough that you can't eat them after the 6 hours after you ate the hard cheese,
yeah,
why don't they have the same effect going forward?
That's it. Why is it? They didn't go so far with this chumrah, the shach says. That's it. It's an anomaly. Fleishig it is. But not every fleishig is the same way the Shulchan Aruch is a chiddush that tapshul shalbosa. Not all Paiskim agreed. The tapshul shalbosa, you have to wait 6 hours. Well, not all everyone agreed to that. But we're noyig like that. But not everyone in the world ever agreed to that, that's true.
So if you cook your pasta in the meat that was used within the last one, in a pot that was used within the last 24 hours.
Yeah, that you certainly don't have to wait six hours. No.
You couldn't eat.
No, you can't eat that. We couldn't put cheese on it.
Right. You won't.
That's for sure. Tam by itself is certainly, you know, there wasn't even, the Shach's case, there was some measure of ban apparently, but it's not certain.
And that ban was by mistake or was known or it doesn't make a difference?
But it doesn't even make a difference. Right? But Shach doesn't say it was there and you didn't bother to clean the pot. You knew it was there. It just was, you know, I didn't care. I have this in yeshiva all the time that, you know, they serve on Wednesdays, they serve, you know, fleishiks for lunch. So sometimes one of the side dishes is rice, for example. So someone eats the rice and they want to know if they have to wait 6 hours after the rice. Because almost inevitably someone will take the spoon with which you take the chicken and they'll dip it into the rice to take their portion of rice. They won't use the spoon that's in the rice. So different than the Shach's case. Fleishig, but you don't become fleishig from it. He's not eating it because he wants the flavor of the little bit of sauce that got there by accident. It's just there. He's not looking for it. So you don't have to wait 6 hours.
But you can't put. But if you put that into cheese.
No way, it's fleishig. So that's, you can't
do trife.
Yeah, that you can't do. But not everything which is fleishig, do you have to wait 6 hours for? Now, I've told you enough that this brings us to a famous riddle. And that is, there's a time that I'm allowed to eat, but I could eat neither milchiks nor fleishiks. Don't tell me Yom Kippur, I can't eat anything. I'm not allowed to eat. I'm allowed to eat, but I can eat neither milchiks nor fleishiks. And I didn't violate any Easter getting here. Everything was strictly according to Hoyle, according to the book. It's a cute riddle. The answer is that on Shabbos Chazon, I ate fleishiks at Shalosh Shuvos. So on Motzei Shabbos, I can't eat fleishiks and I can't eat milchiks. I can just eat parv until 6 hours go by. We put all the elements on the board now. Now, you look troubled, Aaron.
I missed the whole riddle.
Very simple. That's a person's cute. Allowed to eat. It's the time you're allowed to eat, but you can eat neither milchiks nor fleishiks.
So Shabbos, after
Shabbos Chazon, you ate fleishiks for Shalosh Shuvos.
So wait 3 hours.
So you have to wait. Yeah, you can't eat milchiks. And you can't eat fleishiks. You just eat parv.
Is Tisha B'Av, you have to wait 24 hours?
I said when you're allowed to eat. That was part of the riddle. Now, there's another area of the halacha on your day, a simple halachas that we're just not that familiar with. And this, we'll see, Rav Moshe Feinstein saved the American tradition. But it's a lot more complicated than people realize. Not everything that they want to do in this area can they do. How do you make the best French toast? Right, the leftover challah. It's the best French toast. Even the goyim now have bread that's like that, that they use for, you know. That's what they use. I forgot what they call it, but they have a bread which is challah like that they use. This is absolutely the best French toast. The whole world knows. So that's what you do. You take the leftover challah from Shabbos Sunday morning, you make French toast. Now, are you allowed to or not?
Shouldn't have a fleishig a table.
So in the Yerodeya, there's a halacha that bread which was used at a fleishig a meal cannot be used at a milachik a meal, and bread which was used at a milachik a meal can't be used at a fleishig a meal. So here I have, generally speaking, unless it was Shalash Shuddis, but the other challah from Shabbos is used at a fleishig a meal. So can I use the shirayim of that challah, the leftover challah, to use for a milachik a meal? I want to dip it in milk and make French toast that way. What's the difference? So on the surface of it, simply stated, it would seem to be that I'm not allowed. It's awesome. It's a violation of the halacha, you know, a very open halacha in Yerodeya. You don't have to be inferred from someplace. The halacha is black and white.
It's on the table, so we became
so very simple, you know, when people. There's milachiks of fleishiks around, so it's a good chance that it became milachiks of fleishiks from people's hands.
You have to be, I mean, a lot of times people are careful, you know, like they don't...
You know, listen, a lot of times they're not careful, so, you know, so the halacha gave us a rule.
It's like a little plug that it's always assumed.
It's, yes, we always assume the worst. By always assuming the worst, we avoid the worst.
Do the same thing like a salad or something like that as well? Anything that you have on the table?
Hand.
No, this is a hand. You use it with your hand. Bread you eat with your hand.
Now,
even as, you know, as formal as they are in South Africa, in South Africa you get a bread plate. When you take a slice of bread, you put it on a little plate, like sort of like a fish plate, you know. You don't put it on the table. Chas v'shalom, you know. But even there, you do eat the bread with your hand. They don't give you a knife and fork to eat the bread, you know. Not that far. So Rav Moshe Zatzal had a very interesting chiddush in this din. He said the following. This is only relevant to the challah, for example, that you put out on the table, or you put into the bread basket that everyone takes. But if the challah is in front of the balabos, and he's the only one that gives it out, certainly the uncut challah, and if he would not, perhaps, I guess even the cut challah, if he knows he's very careful and he doesn't, you know, touch it inappropriately, then what was left in front of the balabayas that you're allowed to be making about. Presume the pshat is because what's around the table is really impossible to know. A person reached in to take a piece of challah, he has a little bit of cholent, the chicken on his finger, you can't know. In front of the balabas, there's one person can know what he did. So Rav Moshe allowed that to be used for milachiks. So from that part of the challah, you can use for French toast on Sunday morning.
If one wants to be careful because of that, is there anything wrong with taking the bread off the table?
No, you can do. No, so right at the beginning of the meal, what I would tell you, after you cut the challah before you get the fleishiks, take away a half of it and put it away.
But in other words, is there any Indian of keeping bread on the table during the meal?
No. The only problem, no, you don't need to keep. Well, let's put it this way: there's two things you shouldn't do. There should be, at least people should have bread, some measure of bread. It shouldn't be that you hold the bread away, there's no more bread to eat. That's a very big shayla if you have to make a brocha. And that's, we'll come back to it on Shabbos Erev Pesach. And that's where it's relevant. You know, the common practice that people do, I'm not 100% happy about. Because what people do is, on Shabbos Erev Pesach, so they wash, they have the chalas, they get rid of that, and then they sit down by the table and they eat a Pesach Tikka meal. But there's no pas whatsoever there. Now, according to the Rashba, in such a case, you would actually have to make a brocha on the food. Because since you masalik your diamond a pas, you're no longer eating pas, so the pas can no longer, what you're eating now can no longer be considered secondary to the pas. You have this pas around, you don't have to eat pas regularly, you're still involved with eating pas. That's one of the reasons, one of two reasons, in fact, that my personal minig on Shabbos, Shabbos Erev Pesach, by the meal itself, we wash on chalas, but by the meal itself, I use egg matzahs. I eat egg matzahs at the meal for that reason. That's one of the two reasons. First of all, for this reason. I know there are chumras that are machmer from this man Isa not to use egg matzahs, but I don't want to be machmer because of this reason. And the second reason I don't want to be machmer is because it's not muskum to be machmer. The Ramah, in fact, in the two places in the Shulchan Aruch where he talks about it, talks about that people did not eat egg matzahs according to the Ashkenazim on Pesach. Because of that, it was not normal to have egg. Nobody bothered to make egg matzahs. So they didn't have egg matzahs for Erev Yom Tov either. But I believe the Aruch HaShulchan learns that there's no Isser on eating egg matzah Erev Pesach. You know, the Yehuda certainly gave a heter, at least until Chatzos. And I'm a personal messiah. My father, all of Hashalom, knew Rav Lezer Silva. So he asked Rav Lezer Silva about it. Rav Lezer Silva passes the Chatzadik Levach Paskin for him that he could eat egg matzahs the whole day Erev Pesach. So in my mishpacha, in fact, we ate egg matzahs the whole day Erev Pesach for that reason. We used to sit in Erev Pesach in the afternoon. So we used to have boiled potatoes and I think a little sour cream. That was the lunch, typically with a little bit of egg matzah. Small, but that's what we had. You know, every Erev Pesach, that's what we ate. So I'm only meikel personally on when Shabbos is Erev Pesach. So then I eat in the morning hours, until, you know, with the meal. My older brother is faithful to Avasara. He eats egg matzah the whole Erev Pesach. That's the two reasons that I have of being makel, but it's not a good idea to be totally misalik yourself menapas. But what you could do is cut off a part and take it away at the beginning of the meal and just put it away for tomorrow. And then leave some pas around so you don't get into this shayla.
One waits until after fish course to remove the hollow and solve the problem also, right?
Yes, you know, yeah. Before you start bringing the meat dishes, yeah. Again, I wouldn't fully remove the challah at that point, but the challah that you want to use for the milah, let's take away at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Now, one basic.
Well,
yes.
The challah you want to save the milah is, if you cut it and put it aside, that's not borer?
No, there's no borer. So it's just a piece of challah, that's all. It's no different. Burr has to be with two minim, two types. There's no, you know, in fact, I don't think of the, because of the Tzar Yisr Shavu, and I want to save it for later, so it shouldn't get, in effect, spoiled for what I want to use it for. It's not worse than if something's going to get spoiled, that you're allowed to put it away on Shabbos. There's no Yisr Achona on it. I wouldn't call it Achona either. And nor is it Nikr, it's way after Shabbos, whatever, allowed according to the Chayodon, based on Rashi and the Beya. It's also Mutter, so I wouldn't worry about that. There's one thing which is very, very good to do. It's a very elementary thing. And if we fulfill this, the Rav would have a lot less shilas. Now, the shilas are easier for me to deal with than for you to deal with. Because when the balabustas call me up with the shilas, they're all nervous and anxious, what became treif, you know? So I answer the questions for them, but they don't need the anxiety along the way until they have the answer. A very simple thing is do not be cooking milchiks and fleishiks on the stovetop at the same time. And not only that, but don't keep, if you're making milchiks, don't keep fleishik apats on the stovetop. If you're making fleishiks, don't keep milchik apats on the stovetop. Just get them out of there. Because things splish. Whether there's steam that flies out of a pot and splashes onto a pot next to it. Whether you're frying something and when you put something down, the oil tends to shoot out. And all you have, all of a sudden, you have one spot of oil just jumped into the fleishik frying pan. Now, frying pans are very hard to kasha. So that, in fact, may be the death knell of the frying pan, if you did that. So this would save a great deal of grief if we just clear the area. You know, have either only milchiks or fleishiks on there at one shot. That certainly would go a long way towards avoiding many, many of the shilas which come up.
What's the benefit of the stovetop itself? Something you're cooking falls on that
stovetop. It depends on which part of the stovetop, let's be clear. The halacha says the following. In the places where you have fire underneath, that does not become milchiks, fleishiks, or treif. Because of the fact that there's a fire there, it's considered that it burns up anything which might get absorbed in that spot. That spot cannot become treif. So purely mitzara din for that reason. We have chumras for Pesach. We have all types of chumras. We're not dealing with chumras. Bottom line halacha. Before we factor in the chumras that the shohar did, that we find in the Ramah, but bottom line halacha. If on the night of Pesach, the first night of Yom Tov, you took your pot of chicken soup and knedlach, and you put it down on a tray for grate, on a tray for stovetop, where they cooked chazer and pasta today. Okay? Can't get worse, right? Chometz and treif, ben yoimai, you have it all. The halacha is that your chicken soup with your knedlach is kosher lechatchila to eat it to seder. That's the din. But we have chumras not to do such things, but those are chumras. But they're not a din. It's not a din, it's 100% kosher. The problem is if you have places on the stovetop which don't have a fire underneath. You have some, I came to when I was in California, so I have an old friend in California. His wife hears I'm in California, so she calls me up. She runs over to where I'm staying. She lives a number of blocks from there. She drives me to her house, and she wants me to look at the stove in her house. You know, I think she. So I come. So they have like five grates. So four of them around the perimeter have fires under them. There's one in the middle that has no fire under it. There's certainly no intense heat under there. Maybe there's a little something underneath which gives them a touch of heat there, whatever. But I guess it's a place to keep something warm somehow. But there's not a place that you can cook on. So I told her, she has to decide that it's either for the milchiks or the fleishiks. Don't use it for both. Because you don't have the intense heat underneath. So that is in terms of now the peripheries around the edges. So those can be problematic. No. It's not so common that you're going to find an Isser B'di Evid in one of them. No, but it can happen in those places.
If a meatball falls under that, you shouldn't eat it. Or can you?
Well, it depends. Did you use it in the last 24 hours for hot milchiks? If you didn't make hot milchiks there and it's clean, so you're allowed to eat it. But then you start, that's already, then you start after 3 years and you have to calculate what has taken place, you know, in this area the last 24 hours. Now what the dinner splashes is, the dinner splashes is a complicated dinner. Because there are a number of different aspects to it. And the question is, where did the splash hit? Did the splash hit at a level where there's food? Did it hit above the level where there's food? Was the pot open? Was the pot closed? In a closed pot, it's all considered as if the food is in the entire pot. So suppose the pot, so normally we assume the following, that if something, let's say, had a cold pot, a flesh in the pot, and milchik splashed on it, so the pot needs to be kashered. If I had a major splash on the outside of the pot where normally there wouldn't be shishim, in other words, based on how much spilled splashed on the outside, there wouldn't normally be shishim in this pot when I use this pot. So the halacha is the pot has to be kashered before you use it again. There's a Beis Meir and Siman Tzadik Beis that says the following. See how the great Goinim had a cheshbon, a whole different scope of how the pieces fit together for them. So the Beis Meir says the following. Why is it that if I splash the pot that I have to kasher it? He says the reason is because the Shach says there's a suffix. Do we assume that all the time went through to the inside? Or do we assume that the time got stuck in the wall of the pot? It's a suffix. He says, I don't know which it is. So with Suffolk, I have to kasher the pot. So the Beis Meir now makes the following calculation. It's a genius calculation. The Mechaber has a din in the Shulchan Aruch, a very controversial din that the Achronim disagree with. The Mechaber says that for a minor splash on a pot, you don't have to worry about it. You don't even have to kasher the pot. Why? He says, because there will always be shishim in this pot. I splashed a few drops. So even if I make a cup a liquid in it, it's going to have many times shishim of those few drops. And the Mechaber says there's no need to kasha. So they all come along and they ask on the Mechaber, it's a dirabim mevat l'isa l'chadchilu. That if you know there's an isa there, you're not allowed to do something just to mix it in the first place. So now you're mixing it in, so you're not allowed to do it. Both the shach disagrees, and I believe there's a taz someplace that also disagrees with this. So Rabbi Ismail says, no. He says, the halacha is that when do we say in Mevat l'Isra l'chadchila that I can't mix an Isra together with Heter to get rid of, to nullify the Isra, that's if I'm certain that there's Isra here. If there's only a suffix, if there's a doubt if there's Isra here, then you're allowed to take measures to make sure that it will be bottled. So he says, since the Shach says this whole Isra is only misuffic, then maybe the drop got stuck in the pot. Maybe it didn't get stuck, so it's a suffix. And a suffix, there's no Isra mevat l'Isra l'chadchila. So I'm allowed to use the pot, and it's not a problem. So according to Rabbi Ismail, if it's a very minor splash, a few drops, and the pot is hot at the time, like you have hot liquid inside the pot, then you don't have to kasher the pot, according to Rabbi Ismail. So then if it's not hot at the time, then you'd have to kasher, because it certainly got stuck in the pot. So therefore, it's mevat l'Isra l'chadchila. So this is the Beis Meir's Chiddush. It's what you see the, a great goyin at work. How just the precision understanding of all the factors in a case and how to put them together. So this is just a few basic ideas of what we need to be careful about. Now, one other thing that I will tell you, that one of two things in the kitchen. Either have separate spices for the melichics and the flavors, either, is an or. Or don't pour directly from the spice bottles into the hot pots of food. Like pour them into a spoon, a melichic spoon, a flavoring spoon, and then dump them into the appropriate place. But don't start shaking them over the steam. The Shach quotes a run. The Ran says that in the area, just like inside a pot, even if it's open, that's all considered as if it's part of the pot itself. It's all considered part of the Kli Rishon. So there's certainly a very significant chash l'chadchila not to put the spices into that environment. I don't know that they're also b'di evad. I'm not convinced of that. But certainly l'chadchila, you shouldn't be shaking the spices directly into steamy pots. So if you're going to add spice to a hot pot, put it into a flavoring spoon and then put it in with the spoon. So this is just in the commercial, where I have commercial places, you know, let's say, you know, health related, I make them keep two sets of spices. I don't allow them all together to use it, you know, from one side to the next. It's just too difficult to control. You don't have a balabusta there. You know, I can't know what the Hispanic cook is going to do today. So the way he just set it up, he knows there are dairy spices, meat spices, and that's it, and never the twain shall meet. So it's just a few basic ideas. There will not be a shiur next week, Mirz Hashem. Ronnie Schlanger is making a wedding next Tuesday night. And the Tuesday night after that, there will not be a shiur, because I'm going to be Be'ez Hashem on the plane to Eretz Yisrael. So hopefully we will meet again in Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach, hopefully on the 22nd. Will be a shift. So that will confirm as we get a little closer to the date. Okay.
On that riddle, Rav Neuber brings down that some people have a minhag of eating fleishigs Motzei Shabbos during the 9 days, and I actually met somebody from family that has that minhag. It's unusual, I know.
Yeah, it is. It's
that the rush that caused the basar that was left over from
The children, like the leftover children.
No, the passing of the basar and the leftover. After the event, the newborn.